Welcome to Juno Afternoon on this fabulous Friday. I'm Rhonda McBride, your host for this hour, and some deliciously Alaskan conversation coming your way, starting with Chef Steph, here to explain her recipe for success, food, art, and passion. Also, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation's Ticket to Summer Adventure, a chance for middle and high school students to explore Native art, languages, and culture. And all eyes to the skies, three feathered friends to watch out for. But some mixed weather to go along with that. Cloudy skies for tonight, chance of rain showers through this evening and tomorrow, and pretty much the same story through the weekend. Lows tonight in the mid-40s, light winds through tomorrow, with highs in the lower 50s. Juno Afternoon will be right back after National Native News.
Hanson Gress. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha ani kak gunish cheese.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Thank you for being here with us today. I'm Rhonda McBride. Cooking is an art. After all, they do call it the culinary arts, and that's why our guest today is the featured artist at the Juno Artist Gallery this month, Chef Steph Marnin, known simply in Juno as Chef Steph. And her work will be showcased at tonight's First Friday event at the gallery. She'll be there from 4:30 to 6 to answer your questions, but she is here with us now in our studios. And we haven't up until now had many studio guests. We've gradually been bringing them back, but we are really excited to have you here.
Well, thank you. I am so excited to be here. Oh my gosh, the new studios, it's beautiful. And nice to see you, Rhonda. We go way back from the beginning of
your
almost
time
Chef Steph time.
That's right, because when I met you, you had just taken over management of the legislative kitchens and designing the menus and meals for lawmakers. And you were also, at the same time, launching your own business. And I guess you've kind of got an interesting cycle to your work. You work preparing meals for the legislature, and then you shift into Chef Steph.
Yes, it's lovely. I do the Chef Steph, the butter and sugar. That's 6 months out of the year. And then when I start missing soups and savory, then I'm getting back into the lounge at the Capitol. And now I'm ready to bake again. And I'm so fortunate and to be able to do what I love.
You know, I think about you preparing your meals for the lawmakers and thinking about how no matter what their political stripe is, they all have to eat.
Yes.
It's the one common denominator, no matter what issue they're battling. That's quite a thing to be preparing meals for such a group.
My goal, I feel like my job is to keep everybody's blood sugar level even.
So, in other words, they're not getting Chef Steph's treats.
Sometimes I'll make a cookie, but for the most part, it's savory food, soups and salads and lunch specials. And somebody once told me that it was during session, and he had said, you know, we've been at odds. It was the end of session like we're in now, and we've been at odds and we can't agree on anything, but we all were able to agree that lunch was delicious. And there we were. You know, this is what I do. You're breaking bread with people, and it's not political, and it's not you voted this way or your opinion is this or your ideas is that. It's like we're eating together, we're sharing a meal, you're breaking bread, and that's important.
It is, and I wondered this year with COVID, they're not sitting down together sharing meals. And I know that sometimes over meals they talk things out. It's not a hostile environment in the dining room. They get to relax, let their guard down. What's it been like this year?
Quiet and lonely. we've taken over, my kitchen staff, we've taken over the tables with our to-go containers, or we deliver food now, and we know that we're going to have to rein that in once once we open back up. So we have to retrain ourselves. Just like us at home, we have to learn how to put on non-stretchy pants.
Yes, a little bit of that COVID pooch, I think, has at least I know, has befallen me. I'm carrying a little extra. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I've wanted to be comforted by food during this time. A lot of people maybe feel that way.
This COVID and food go hand in hand. You're home, and I remember in the beginning of COVID when you couldn't find flour and yeast because everybody was making bread and banana bread and whatever the trend was, you're home. And I don't know about you, but I have this list of when I have time, I want to try to bake bread, which I do terribly, by the way. And everybody's making bread, which is great because I get to try other people's bread. But everybody's home and not going anywhere. You don't want to go to the store. So you're looking around your house and saying, huh, what's in my pantry? What's that something that I haven't gotten to because I don't know how to make it or I don't know what to do with it? And we're all in front of the computers and we're all stuck inside and we're making things go away because going to the grocery store was really scary.
So you've got some new products that are going to be shown off tonight at the first Friday and available this month. So were they somewhat COVID inspired?
They were. That was exactly the thing that I was doing. I was looking in my kitchen saying, what do I have and what can I make? And like most of my new creations, they're based around my family. My husband's favorite candy, my almond toffee, is his. Well, he started before I started making it. The almond roca was his favorite thing, and we were first dating, and I was like, oh, he likes almond roca. And then I started making it years later, and I couldn't give him the almond roca anymore. He wouldn't eat it. He had to have mine. And then other people had to have mine. And then the granola and the almond toffee is pretty much what started Chef Steps. And
trying to please your husband, please your family, and
yes,
please yourself.
You know, he's the opinion that I rely on the most. And it's their opinion that matters most to me. They may not think that, but don't tell them.
Okay.
Thank you.
Your secret is safe with us.
So my husband also loves cashews and pistachios, and we always have them in the house. And I saw that almond roca has all these new flavors at Christmas, and he had a stocking full of, even though I said that he won't eat that, they were different flavors. So he got it in his stocking. And then I said, I could do that too. And went to the nuts that he loves the best. And they're delicious. And then I found packaging. And I love packaging catalogs. So I found these great little bags that made everything look great. And I was excited.
Well, why is it that the looks of things matter to you almost as much as the taste of things?
Well, you eat with your eyes first. If something, I have eaten many a thing that was not, did not live up to what it looked. Oh my gosh, that is delicious. And then you eat it, and I could have just taken a picture. And then other things were like, oh, I'm afraid to eat that because that looks maybe scary. And it was amazing. Hopefully, mine both looks good and is amazing. And that's what I try to do. I'm from New York. And Dinan DeLuca was this, I don't even know if they're still, I know they're online, but that was like when I started packaging, I wanted my labels to look like Dinan DeLuca's. And it started that way. It morphed just to make it user-friendly because I could not handwrite every label because I was making too many. Oh, shucks. And that to me is how the packaging is makes you pick it up. I buy wine that way.
And I don't think a lot of people know that initially you wanted to be a visual artist.
I was an art director for many years before switching over to cooking. So it's really a way that I don't feel like I wasted my college money. And I'm using all of what you learn. So I'm selling things. Everything, every package of mine is, I guess, an ad that said, buy this because it's delicious. Or it looks delicious. And then it is.
So I'm curious because a lot of times when you look on your website, you have things that are all sold out. So do you ever like think about perhaps expanding and hiring people, maybe making it sort of a bigger chef machine rather than sort of a small homegrown business?
I have never been able to make that jump. And Chef Steps is me. I literally touch every aspect. I package. I do everything from the shopping to the baking and the packaging and the designing. And that's crazy. But I just haven't. I've tried to let people in, and I guess I don't share well.
You know, it's interesting. This summer, there's an exhibit at the museum, The Spirit Wraps Around You, and it's a collection of Southeast Alaska Native weaving blankets. And one of the things that a presenter said when the exhibit opened is that there is a lot of thought put into what your mental state is when you're weaving, that it's very important that you put good things into it, this sense of protection, love. So I'm curious, how about your cooking? Is there a certain mental state you have to be in to work on your Chef Steph projects?
Sometimes, we always want to be in a positive mood when we're doing something. But you know what? I love my tiny little kitchen. It's a windowless room and I'm by myself, which helped during COVID. But I will be tired and, I have to make candy. I have this order to fill. Oh, I'm so tired. And I walk in there and all of a sudden I am rejuvenated. That is my happy place. That is where I go and time stops. I'll be there for a few minutes and it's 4 hours later. My husband calls it Chef Steph time or kitchen. He calls it kitchen time. You know, I'll be home in an hour. Is that a real hour or kitchen hour? Which means he'll never see me until I'll wake him up. Oh, sorry, honey.
So in other words, you just love to do this. It's a passion to make these wonderful treats.
It is. It is a passion. But I have to say every once in a while, I have to leave because everything I've put in the oven or mixed or it just wasn't working. And we all have those days where you just call it and you say, we're done for the day. We'll try again tomorrow. But luckily, those are far and few between.
So really, your products are you and you are your products. And
very much so.
And a lot of thinking goes into how they roll out every season for the holidays. And I understand that you've got a Gay Pride Month theme going with some of your shortbreads and toffees. What kind of thinking went into that?
Once again, it's packaging. So the company that I use, the catalogs come and I look and they're always coming up with they have new packaging as well, boxes and bows and ribbons and that is a lot of where I get my inspiration, because I said, oh, look at that. I could make the shortbread. That's how the shortbread cups came into play and how that has expanded because the packaging has changed and they've gotten more and more. So the boxes that the shortbread sit in held the right amount of shortbread, and I wanted to make the flag, the pride flag colors, and I have the sprinkles. I love sprinkles. And I said, I can make the flag. They have pre-made bows or pre-tied bows. And it is of the rainbow And I loved that. And I said, you know, I picked June to be the featured artist because I wanted to use the rainbow and just celebrate the Pride community.
Right. So the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer, LGBTQ.
Yes. Thank you. But,
yes, it's a mouthful to say, but a lot to think about. It. Why did you decide you wanted to offer something to this community? Because you don't always see that in businesses.
You know, June, now that there is a Pride Month, you see it in June a lot. And I was worried about appropriation. I didn't want to be like a box store that just put a sticker on something and says, yay. But I spoke with friends and I'm a supporter and I want the community to be seen. They are our neighbors. They're our friends.
And I think that that's something very special, that this is being offered. And so certainly those of us who have gay friends from that community are going to be excited to find something that might be a little special for them. And you have in front of you one of the set of shortbreads, and it's just lovely.
Oh, thank you.
And it's just in a nice little package, a row of rainbow-colored pieces of shortbread.
It's the shortbread cups filled with chocolate ganache, and then on top is each shortbread. There's seven shortbread because the packaging changed, but the red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple. And then
what is ganache?
Ganache is chocolate and cream.
Oh. It goes back to your mantra of butter and sugar.
Yes.
What is it about butter and sugar?
Oh, it's lovely. It is the basis of, well, everything that Chef Steph makes.
Butter and sugar.
It all starts with butter and sugar.
And a little extra TLC, I'm sure, thrown in with that. So how is this First Friday being handled? Because we still are in a COVID time.
We are. Masks are worn, and we ask folks to sanitize their hands. And I think a lot of us are vaccinated. We're not asking because not really sure you can, but it's the honor system, just like we've been doing so far. The CBJ opened up the city, and I feel so fortunate to have a First Friday where people could come. Things have changed. We're still not doing food. The gallery was known for their delicious First Friday treats. It's driving me crazy not to sample. I am a food pusher, and as you know, by bringing treats, but I can't have a tray for everybody to take something. And that makes me sad, but we could see each other. We're in person, and that makes me very happy.
Yeah, and people can ask you questions about how you develop your recipes, and it's a very personal touch to actually meet the person who makes the product.
It's always nice to meet the person who's doing anything, like radio personalities. You hear people's voices, and you know them so well. And then you meet them for the first time, and you're like, oh my gosh, it's weird because I know you, but I don't.
Well, that's the nice thing, finally, that COVID restrictions are starting to relax with more and more people vaccinating. So that's wonderful news. Well, before we wrap things up, anything you want to share about your First Friday exhibit that we haven't talked about just yet?
I don't think so. I think we covered a lot, but please come on down, say hi. I don't know about you, but I have missed hugs so much. And if you want a hug, we could do that. And come down. I really want to show off and let's support our gay community and let them know that this, and make it more than just a month. I will have these out year-round.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, it's great to be thinking ahead, you know, to the holidays and other things, to have things you can buy that will mean something. And I'm sure you've put a lot of heart into this and a lot of thought, as you do with everything, it sounds like.
Well, thank you, Rhonda. And I want to welcome you back to Juno. It's our gift to have you back here again.
Oh, thank you. I've really felt lucky, and I'm so glad now that the COVID restrictions are lifting so we can have people in our studios. We're doing it gradually, but it's going to be nice to meet people face-to-face rather than just talk to them over the phone or Zoom.
Yes. So thank you for letting me be one of the few first guests.
We're so excited. Well, thank you so much, Chef Steph, for joining us.
Du siehst so ja je nach Jan de Jan, was sei ja ti, was sei ja ti, we kuschet lapcha, we kuschet lapcha, agua ge ach sieg awe, ho awe, ho awe.
Listening to Ed Littlefield and his Native Jazz Trio. And it seems like an appropriate kind of piece leading into our next interview with the Gold Belt Heritage Foundation. They're going to be talking about their summer camp, and that just sounds like a wonderful adventure for young people to learn about arts and the culture. So stay with us. I'm Rhonda McBride. Good to have you here with us on Juno Afternoon. For the young people who take part in Gold Belt Heritage Foundation summer youth programs, It could be one of those summers that changes the course of their lives. At least, that's the way it's been designed, to immerse young people in skills that Southeast Alaska Natives traditionally taught to their age group. So a lot of thought and preparation has gone into this. And joining us now, Desiree Jackson. She's executive director for the Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and Lyle James, who is the program administrator for the foundation. So let's start off by having each of you introduce yourself using your culture. So we'll start with you, Desiree.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. My name is Desiree Jackson. I'm the executive director for Gold Belt Heritage Foundation. My Tlingit name is Dushadi, little kitty, and I'm so happy to be here.
I love that name, little kitty. Lyle, your name, your Tlingit name is a very challenging one to pronounce, so I'll let you handle that.
My name is Chika Ish, and it's a name that was given to me by my great-grandfather, and it was a clan brother of my great-grandfather that I was named after, and his name was Robert Grant, his English name. I'm Kaguantan, and I'm from Huna. Our clan originally comes from Kauknuu, which is Grouse Fort.
That's a lot of wonderful history, and for a period of time, a lot of young Tlingits and other Southeast Alaska Natives didn't really get that history. So I'm curious, and we'll start with Desiree. What is top of mind to each of you in shaping this summer camp?
You know, for us, it's all about the language and the culture. And as you can see, we're so blessed at Gold Belt Heritage Foundation to have these amazing cultural bearers be leading and be part of our camps. And so, you know, we're gonna really immerse ourselves this summer in the language and, you know, from harvesting to form line to weaving, whatever we do, it'll all be based in language. And we're so excited to see this happen.
So language is the thread that's going to tie all of it together. And that's a tall order, isn't it, Lyle, to be doing this?
Well, the way we think about it is we're healing through our language. And everything that we do and everything that we absorb as teachers and as students, it helps us grow. It creates a foundation that we can look forward to and hold our heads up with pride.
So who are some of the presenters that you're bringing in to help share this cultural knowledge and language?
We have some wonderful teachers coming on board. We have Nay Brown, who is going to be our lead teacher. She has been teaching both at the university and through the camps that Gold Belt Heritage Foundation has been hosting. We also have the guidance of Marsha Hodge, who is a teacher in Haines and Clockwan territory. She is also an adjunct faculty with the university as well. And they both do a dynamic lessons to just bring out the pride within the students. We also have Fred White, who is also there right along their sides and just keeping up with the hard work that these ladies are doing in the language.
And I just want to add that, you know, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation is so happy to have both Marsha and Fred. As they introduce themselves, they'll let you know that they are amongst the youngest folks who are fluent language speakers. So Fred touts himself as the youngest male fluent language speaker and Marsha the youngest female. Fluent speakers are not around much. They're very few and far between. And so it's really important for us to have those fluent speakers on staff.
And for the young people to hear the language spoken by people who are first language speakers, not perhaps people that can speak in phrases and just really know part of the legacy. So I guess in a way, they're really having a hand, a physical connection with the language legacy. And how important is that, that they kind of get that they can soak that in?
It is so important because if you don't know the Alaska history with the indigenous people and boarding schools, Southeast was the first to be hit. And the elders, these generations, two generations ago, one generation ago sometimes, for some of these students, have been touched by boarding schools and how it impacted them. But now seeing this generation and how they take the pride in learning Tlingit and who they are and where they come from, it's starting a healing process.
In some ways, when you hear about some of these programs, from learning how to prepare and, well, harvest and prepare foods and learn the traditional form line drawing and weaving, my goodness, do you kind of wish that these sorts of programs were available when you were a kid?
100%. Oh, my goodness. They would be so powerful. And I'm blessed that now my kids get access to that, is all I can say. One of the things I wanted to reiterate about these camps is that, yes, there is this language component and this form line component. There's a lot that we're going to be learning, but it's all based in having a lot of fun and having a connection with our people. And so I'm wanting to put on my camp hat and go with them and just experience it like a kid again, just because it's such an amazing opportunity for them.
So, Lyle, what was it like for you growing up as a kid? How were you able to learn about your culture? Because obviously you've absorbed a lot. I mean, you speak the language, you know the stories.
I was pretty fortunate. My father was actually a camp coordinator growing up. So I attended the camp from the day that I was able to start walking or going to school. And my father had me by his side right up until I was too old for being an overnighter to being a chaperone. That's been my life, is culture camps. My father, Owen James, used to run the camps in Cake. And that's where I grew up and learning a lot of the things that I teach now.
So there have been some culture camps and more recently more of those. Has there been enough of them for you to see the impact that they have on the young people?
Yes. Being a teacher for going on 18 years, some of the kids that I used to work with when I first started, I now get to have some of their kids as my high school students. And that's been a phenomenal partnership with the parents and the community, and seeing that they have the trust within us to share the knowledge that this amazing team has. So, and I look forward to doing this every summer.
So what are the seeds that you're trying to plant with these students? Because you're covering a lot of territory, especially with the language and some of the other cultural programs like the subsistence harvesting and preparation of foods, form line drawing. So what is it that you want the kids to take with them? Because it's not enough time to become experts in those subjects.
I'm a registered dietitian by trade. And, you know, one of the things that we were taught in college is that, you know, you give a kid's taste. Like, kids are, you know, they have these developing palates, right? And so when you introduce foods to kids, that's a comforting thing that they're going to grow up with a taste for the rest of their life. And that's the way I see what we're doing as well. Not only with the traditional foods, giving them that hands-on experience, giving them a taste so that this is what nourishes them and comforts them and creates this healthy lifestyle desire within them for the rest of their life and for future generations.
Lyle, what seeds are you working to plant this summer?
The joys of being themselves and knowing that they're enough. And because being Tlingit, Haida Tsimshian, being a human being in Southeast Alaska, knowing how to survive in these territories is a great thing to know. Going back to who we're going to have on the team, my wife, Dr. Klutch, is going to be an ethnobotany instructor during that camp. And she's going to teach the students how to harvest edible medicinal plants. And so that plant recognition is something that when they walk around on the trails here in town or anywhere here in Southeast, they can identify those plants and take pride in saying, this is what I learned.
And there is sort of a feeling of strength, I think, when you can look at plants and say, that is what you need maybe to soothe this scratch that you have or the to prevent it from becoming infected. This will work. I think that perhaps young people don't have enough things in their lives that actually empower them today. I mean, not just for Southeast Alaska Natives, but just across the world.
Absolutely.
So there are two sets of workshops. So you want to explain to us how they work and when they happen?
So July 12th through the 15th, we will be having our middle school youth camp. That's going to be out at the Eagle River Methodist Camp. Absolutely free registration. We're offering travel scholarships. I want to let everybody know that these camps are open to not only youth here in Juneau, but youth across Southeast and especially our Gold Belt shareholders and their descendants. So essentially they'll be overnight and these days are jam-packed from the start of the day to the finish of the day. Then we also have, starting July 16th through the 29th, we have a 14-day high school camp, which will be again overnight at the Methodist area. It is a longer camp, but this camp is offering dual credit to our high school students for both college and high school. So they will not only be walking away with all this knowledge, they'll actually have credit at school and into college.
So they get a head start for college and they get an inoculation of a lot of good wisdom to see them through their lives. So what an opportunity. I imagine, though, with COVID, registration is fairly limited, that you can't have as many students in person at these camps as you normally might.
Yeah, it does restrict us on the amount of students that we can work with at one time. But we are following the CDC policies to make sure that all students and participants are safe at all times. This is a policy that we want to maintain as the students participate throughout the whole academy, both middle school and high school.
We are working with the CBJ to get our kids who are coming into camp vaccinated if the parents and the child agree. That's something we're working hand in hand with them. We're also working with CBJ so that we can do the testing as folks come in. And so there'll be some peace of mind that they've been tested and that we're following CDC protocols. So unfortunately, that pandemic's still sort of lingering around, but we feel very confident that this summer camp is one of the safest places that your youth can be.
I have to bring this up, Lyle, because I count myself one of the lucky ones to have heard you tell the tale of the strong man. A wonderful story that, as I think on it, is layered with so many messages. So will your students be hearing your strongman story this summer?
There's a possibility, but we do have some wonderful storyteller guest speakers who'll be coming up to do storytelling throughout both camps.
Well, basically, just to recap, because we don't have time here, the strongman is a story where you are encouraged to look at a person beyond what you see and watch what they do. And sometimes what they do has mystery involved in it, too. You don't always see what people contribute. But it's a beautiful story, and the more I reflect on it, the more I keep learning from it. What is the value of kids hearing these stories that are going to be shared this summer?
Knowing the protocol of the stories and who the stories belong to. Like, for instance, the Strongman story actually belonged to the Raven people. And we want to make sure that they understand, as they're listening to these stories, our histories, it belongs to specific clans. And knowing as they go out and they hear and they share their stories, they know exactly who they're talking about and the relations to those stories.
So it's more than a story, but really about how people are connected with one another.
Yes.
And so many valuable lessons. Well, I want to thank both of you for being here with us to answer our questions and pique our curiosity about what's being taught this summer. Desiree Jackson and Lyle James with the Gold Belt Heritage Foundation. Thanks for coming on to Juno Afternoon and sharing with us.
Ganeshchish.
Ganeshchish.
Join AWARE in partnership with the Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska and KTOO as they bring hope, healing, and peace to domestic and sexual violence survivors, their families, and victims' loved ones through the raising of a healing totem pole at Twin Lakes. You can be a part of this healing story by supporting the Kase Totem Plaza campaign. For more info and or to donate, visit awareak.org.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Alaska's roadways are full of hazards, but safety for you and your passengers starts inside the vehicle. So look around you and be sure to wear your seatbelt, including the shoulder belt, and wear it correctly. Ensure all child seats and restraints are properly installed. Secure loose objects inside your vehicle, such as pets, equipment, and cargo. Occupant protection is for everyone. Protect yourself and all passengers, and arrive alive. Paid for by the Alaska Highway Safety Office.
Support comes from Nugget Alaskan Outfitter, providing a curated selection of goods from sunglasses to rain gear to live, work, and play in Southeast. Open Monday through Friday, 10 to 8, Saturday, 10 to 6, Sunday, noon till 5 at the Mendenhall Mall.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Well, these summer days flip by just like the birds that come and go. We only have a few months of prime time bird watching, but we can always count on Brenda Wright from the Juno Audubon Society to keep her eyes on the sky and on the beaches and forests of Juno. So we always like to start, Brenda, by talking about your most recent bird watching trip and hearing about what you saw when you were out.
Hi, Rhonda. Yes, one of the things I saw today that was so pleasing to me was my shadow.
Your shadow.
Remember that? Anyway, Point Bridget is a really hot spot right now because it's just a little bit behind us as far as temperatures. But so the flowers are a little bit behind, but they're really beautiful. And there's lots of red-winged blackbirds, Wilson snipes, all the warblers that we have in town. and two kinds of flycatchers.
Well, I've got the sound that you've provided so we can hear the birds. And, of course, we've got their photographs on our website, the Juno Afternoon website. Okay, so let's start off by hearing Blackbird Redwing. Here we go. You can hear it through the traffic there, but it's kind of a harsh-sounding bird.
It loves swamps. It has to have grass over your head so we make a nice, safe nest nobody can see. And it likes to, this is the best part about some birds, it sits on the top of a tree and whistles at you until you look at it.
So it likes attention.
It does. And it's doing that so that nobody encroaches on its territory. You can find it in marshes around Lemon Creek and Point Bridget and Mendenhall Peninsula.
And the male is all black, but it has this lovely patch of red.
Yes. And when it's making its whistle sound, it flares that up just to make sure you can see how beautiful it is.
And how about the females? What do they look like? Are they as exciting to watch?
Well, you know, they do a lot of the work of the nest, and so they look very camouflaged. They're just a really beautiful shades of brown and white and gray, so that anything flying over above the nest would not see them.
Ah, and so now we've got a wonderful duck here. It's called what, a common merganser? Am I pronouncing it right?
That's right. It's a merganser,
Merganser. Okay, so here we go. Here's what this sounds like. It's kind of like a wah, wah.
Yep. Not quite like a mallard going quack, quack, quack. But this bird is really easy to find because they love small fish. So any place where the salmon are coming out of the river is smolts or young tiny fish, that's where you'll find them. And the picture of the female with, she's got a little bit grayer body like the red-winged blackbird female, but they often have up to 17 babies. I didn't count the one on the picture I saw.
the one that we put up on the web. Yeah, she's got a whole brood just right in line behind her. Such a wonderful photo.
And the one nice thing about the gentleman, the male, he's got a really dark head and a white body. So it's easier to find him, and a sharp red bill to spear fish with, because that's what they want to eat.
Well, I'm glad you pointed that out, a sharp bill. So we saved the best for last. We have the yellow warbler. And, of course, the warbler always sounds the most musical to me. So here we go. It just sounds like a very musical bird. I guess that's probably why they call singers warblers, right?
Well, this one, a lot of times they have slightly different accents in different parts of the country. And our bird often sounds a lot like sweet, sweet, sweet.
Ah, that's a nice sound. I'll play that again so we can pick up the sweet, sweet, sweet. Well, Brenda, thanks for being here with us to point out three birds that are in the hood, so to speak, at this time of the year, the red-winged blackbird, the yellow warbler, which you just heard, and the common merganser, which is a duck. And the moms have lots of babies in tow. So any final words for us?
Oh, don't let the rain discourage you. They're still coming. And anything that likes to eat mosquitoes, we love to death.
You know, that is a benefit to having the birds here for the summer. Thanks so much, Brenda Wright with the Juneau Audubon Society.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Support for Juneau Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klinkit & Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.
And just a reminder, we are on our summer schedule with Juno Afternoon on the air on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Friday through the middle of August. We'll be back Wednesday with another show. Some of the conversations you can look forward to: Perseverance Theater Summer Camp, Southeast Alaska's annual Gardeners Tour, and an update on Southeast Alaska's independent living programs. And that'll do it for Juno Afternoon today, broadcast live on KTOO 104.3 FM. Thanks for joining us. We hope you have a great weekend.
This is KTOO Juno, where we are honored to broadcast on Tlingit Ani. We broadcast on 104.3 FM from our main transmitter in downtown Juno. We rebroadcast on translators 276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Huna, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait.